Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Jay Shapiro Show.
Hello again, this is Jay Shapiro. Thanks for listening. The political situation in Israel is so ridiculous that if someone were to write a movie or a play using what's happening here in Israel as a plot, no one would believe it. We have had four elections in 2 years, which cost a tremendous amount of money, that could certainly have been used for more useful purposes. The new Knesset was sworn in this week. This occurred just a few hours after President Reuven gave the Prime Minister Netanyahu the mandate to try to form a new government. And all this is only a few days after the Prime Minister was indicted for corruption and is going to go on trial. The President spoke at the ceremony and he actually broke into tears. He bemoaned the fact that in his 7 years as President, he has presided over six Knessets. He lamented the fact that the situation in Israel is so divisive, but is not quite correct. The manner in which the people have reacted to this year-long corona crisis really shows, that the population is not divided. It is the politicians who are more interested in their personal ambitions than in the future of the Jewish state. And this, of course, is a tragedy. Just think about it. A prime minister who is about to go on trial is being given the mandate to try to form a government. Luckily, the people of Israel are better than their politicians. And as I said, if this was the plot of a play or a movie, no one would believe it. But unfortunately, it is the reality in which we live and we shall have to overcome. That is the challenge, a real challenge, and I assume from the past experience of the Jewish people that we will survive. The problem is, as it always is for the Jews, is not survival, but the price of survival. Hopefully the price of our inability to govern ourselves will not be too high. I'll be back after the break.
Did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel?
Shalom, I'm Natalie Sapinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. The listeners, I think, are familiar that every now and then I like to do what I call under the radar. These are news items that don't get big headlines, but I collect them and I share them with the listeners in order to provide color and background for what's happening in Israel and in the Jewish world. But this week I have something that's even bigger than just plain background. It has to do with the American support of the Palestinian Authority, something that was very, very reduced during the previous administration. In particular, something called the Taylor Force Act. Back in 2017, Congress passed the bipartisan Taylor Force Act to put an end to the Palestinian Authority's practice of using U.S. taxpayer dollars to finance what we call pay-for-slay, a policy rewarding terrorists and their families, and not only deceased terrorists, but also imprisoned terrorists. The legislation passed by the U.S. Congress clearly expressed goal is to deny the Palestinian Authority funding until it stops its program of incentivizing and paying for the murder of Israelis. The bill was named after a U.S. Army veteran who had served in Iraq and Afghanistan and was killed on a visit to Israel by a Palestinian terrorist. The Palestinian Authority media called his killer a martyr, and he was venerated throughout the Palestinian territories. Now, the Taylor Force Act, named after this American who was killed by the Palestinians, requires the State Department to issue a report to Congress for acts of terrorism. Despite the report's conclusion that the Palestinian Authority has not terminated payments for acts of terrorism to any individual and has also not taken proactive steps to counter incitement to violence against Israelis, the administration's report states that the Biden-Harris administration has made clear its intent to restart assistance to the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, which is to say they intend to ignore the continued support of terrorism and resume supplying the money to the terrorists, something which the previous administration did not do. The Biden administration claims it can restore funding to the Palestinian Authority without violating the Taylor Force Act. It claims its goal is to provide humanitarian assistance, rebuild trust with the Palestinians that was undermined by the Trump administration, and economically stabilize the government while advancing the Marbon peace process with Israel. The Trump administration cut off funding to the Palestinian Authority and to the UNWRA, UNRWA, the UN agency that financially supports descendants of Palestinian refugees. Now, that is what the Trump administration did. However, the Biden administration is also planning as a goodwill gesture to reverse Trump's decision to close the PLO office in Washington, which was done to give more consequence to its continuing to incite and pay for terrorism. The State Department report is clear enough. It says the Palestinian Authority expressed its intention to expend approximately $151.6 million in payments to convicted prisoners, administrative detainees, and former prisoners, and express its intention to expend approximately $191 million in support of families of deceased Palestinians referred to as martyrs. In November 2020, the President Mahmoud Abbas, President of the Palestinian Authority, said we would remain loyal to the souls of martyrs, the blood of injured, and the sufferings of prisoners. We will not abandon them. So this perverse incentive used by the Palestinian Authority is that the more gruesome and worse the attack, the more money the imprisoned martyr and his family received through the Palestinian Authority's Martyrs Fund. The PA spends nearly $350 million per year on pay for slaves, budget just $220 million for its other welfare programs for the rest of its citizens. In other words, the bulk of the money goes to pay the family of terrorists. In Washington today, everything is seen through the political lens. Back in 2017, Chuck Schumer said Abbas has to stop making payments to terrorists and their families, or we'll call them out. Now, the question is, will Schumer challenge his new president from his party to keep the pressure on Abbas and enforce the law? Or will the Democratic leadership go along with the spinning some words to fashion a legal loophole to allow money to flow to the Palestinian Authority? The Palestinian Authority would like to create a legal fiction by distributing the money through the PLO. But Abbas is both the president of the Palestinian Authority and the head of the PLO. So the Biden administration is apparently going back on all the things that the Trump administration did, and it's now doing what it can to give money to the Palestinian Authority, which is using most of the money to support terrorism. And by the way, along the same lines, the new U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, spoke in support of Palestinian rights during a meeting with Israel's Foreign Minister, Gabi Ashkenazi. And according to the State Department statement, the secretary emphasized the administration's belief that Israelis and Palestinians should enjoy equal measures of freedom, security, and prosperity and democracy. Now, all of this is part of a series of comments the Biden administration had made, which show a markedly different stance from that of the Trump administration, during whose tenure ties were severed with the Palestinian Authority and funding to the Palestinians was eliminated under Trump. The U.S. has recently begun to restore financial assistance to the Palestinian people, with the U.S. announcing last month it would provide $15 million. Last week, the Associated Press reported that Congress had been notified that the Palestinians would also receive an additional $75 million. So it's interesting. Just last week, the U.S. State Department spokesman, a guy named Ned Price, had also spoken out against Israeli settlement activities. The Trump administration had stopped issuing such statements against Jewish settlement, but U.S. President Joe Biden's administration, in contrast, has revived, carefully adding in statements against Palestinian incitement. According to this spokesman for the State Department, he said, and I quote, "We believe when it comes to settlement activity that Israel should refrain from unilateral steps that exacerbate tensions that undercut efforts to advance a negotiated two-state solution, and that includes the annexation of territory, that includes settlement activity," according to the spokesman. So the new administration is going back on what the Trump administration did, and the Biden administration has also introduced the word occupied to describe the West Bank, a term which the Trump administration had dropped. As a matter of fact, the man speaking for the State Department was asked directly, "Do you think the West Bank is occupied?" And this Ned Price, the spokesman for the State Department, said, "Yes, we do think that the West Bank is occupied by Israel." He also spoke in support of a two-state solution, as something which is already was given up by everybody years ago. They're supporting a two-state solution. And he also referenced the normalization deals between Israel and the other Arab nations, but didn't say anything about it. The Biden administration so far has supported those deals, although unless pressed, they do not use the term Abraham Accords. That's the word used by the Israel and the countries that signed these deals with during the last year. So what's happened so far, I guess, is that the Biden administration is backtracking on the attitude of the American government toward the Palestinian Authority, then it's going to return the terrorist headquarters back to Washington, D.C. And so far, it's gone a long way toward restoring the funding to the Palestinian Authority, which the Palestinian Authority used to pay to the family of terrorists. So far, it looks like there's been pretty much of a betrayal by the American government toward Israel. Actually, we were very happy under the Trump administration, and now we also have other exposés from an Israeli NGO called Ad Kan saying how the Arabs are building in the area called Area C, which according to the agreement 25 years ago is supposed to belong to Israel. So under the Biden administration, there's been a lot of backtracking over the positive moves by the Trump administration. I wanted to share that with the listeners. It doesn't get the big headlines, but it's real, and it shows a trend which is not good for Israel. I'll be back after the break.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. Although I don't generally talk about foreign affairs, I want to say a few words about our neighbor Jordan. There have been some rumors that there's unrest in Jordan. We don't know exactly what took place. There may have been an attempted overthrow of the ruling monarch, but we don't know for sure. There are definitely signs of trouble and instability. And most of the power in the region have support King Abdullah. Now, Israel, perhaps more than most, should be interested in making sure that Jordan remains secure and stable. It is essential to Israel's security. Israel shares its longest border with Jordan. Take a look at the map. It's over 300 kilometers, which stretches most of the length of our country, the entire east side. That is a peaceful one, allows Israel to maintain a low-level military presence and considerably reduces any threats against the Jewish state. There's a road running along the Jordan River, which I have traveled on a number of times, and you, most of the time, for example, if you're going from Jerusalem to Tiberias, you drive from Jerusalem down toward the Dead Sea, then you drive along a road, I think it's number 90, and the entire time you're driving, you're riding along the border with Jordan, which you can see just a few miles away. So Jordan acts as a buffer zone. Without Jordan, there'd be no real separation between Israel and the other countries that threaten Israel, like Iraq, and even further away. And it also helps keep the Palestinian Authority in check. There is a cold peace. I have been to Jordan on a number of occasions, once as a tourist and several times as a company business people who had business in Jordan. Amman is a modern city, and there is a solid security relationship based on mutual interest between Israel and Jordan. This is particularly true now because Israel is developing stronger relations with the Gulf states, which is on the other side of Jordan. So the bottom line is that Jordan is a country which we have peace, and there is strategic importance in our relations with Jordan. And of course, Israel should do everything we can to preserve this alliance, which has existed for more than 30 years. A strong Jordan is not only an Israeli security interest, but it's also a diplomatic and economic interest. So we should do everything in our power to economically assist them. They have some real serious problems out particularly because they have over 1 million people who got kicked out of Syria in that civil war that's been going on there for a number of years. So the stability of Jordan is extremely important to Israel. There's no two ways about that. Some people said that we don't have a cold peace with Jordan. We have a jittery peace. Now, obviously, Jordan is one of our most important regional allies, with whom security ties are often described as a cornerstone of regional stability. And all this kind of thing, Israel has reason to ensure that Jordan is stable. A lot of it has to do with the Temple Mount, which is often a crisis point. Now, what are some of the critical points with Jordan? Again, I said we want a stable Jordan. Now, what's happened is that Israeli willingness to advance a plan to annex 30% of what's called the West Bank over the last several years, including the Jordan Valley, created an immediate public backlash among the Jordanian public, because a lot of the Jordanian, if not most of the Jordanian public, is Palestinians. And that backlash could have threatened to undermine the kingdom. Meanwhile, our government suspended the plan to annex those West Bank areas. Palestinians make up over 50% of the population in Jordan, so tensions in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict often translate into public pressure on the Jordanian leadership to take a harsher tone with Israel. So the Temple Mount is a critical point. If Israel tries to change the status quo in the Temple Mount, of course, is one of the most volatile flashpoints in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There is a very careful arrangement among Israeli, Jordanian, and the Islamic Waqf, the Islamic Trust, which administers the site that everyone can visit, but where only Muslims can worship. In other words, the site of our Temple Mount is in Muslim hands. The ban on non-Muslim worship on the Temple Mount has been in place since the aftermath of the Six-Day War. Now, the American President Trump planned to resolve the Middle East conflict alluded to a change in the status quo to allow for those of all faiths to pray there, including Jews. And there's been a growing political movement within the Israeli right wing, including by ministers of Netanyahu's own Likud party, to allow Jewish worship at the site. And a number of crises have occurred. For example, a brief crisis erupted in the summer of 2017 after two Israeli policemen were shot to death near the Lions Gate entrance to the Old City by three Israeli Arabs who had just visited the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound for a weekly Friday prayers. After the attack, they ran back in the direction of the Temple Mount, where they were killed by Israeli police. So to prevent further such attacks, Israel placed metal detectors at the entrance to the Temple Mount, and the decision sparked immediate violent protests in Jerusalem and the West Bank and created an immediate backlash with Jordan. So every now and there is a crisis with Jordan, and it's something that we have to worry about. Now, back in 2014, they withdrew their ambassador for 3 months after Israeli security forces responded to clashes at the Al-Aqsa Mosque by entering that area. So there is a tension with Jordan all the time. For example, back in 2019, a dispute broke out between Israel and Jordan when Israel detained but initially refused to release two Jordanians suspected of security transgression. And Israel released them only after Jordan recalled its ambassador. There's been violence at the Israeli embassy compound in Amman, the capital of Jordan. Back in July 2017, a violent incident occurred in an apartment within the Israeli embassy compound in Amman. It left two Jordanians dead. Jordan claimed that the security guard had unnecessarily fired his gun when a dispute turned violent. Israel called it a terror attack. So, the point I'm trying to make is that we have a long border with Jordan, and we have a jittery peace because things can happen all the time. Now, the latest thing that happened is that the Hashemite kingdom and its relationship to the Temple Mount is very important to them. The Israel might have, what happened was recently, Israel might have barred Hussein, one of the king's sons, because they barred him from entering Israel because he wanted to bring a security retinue that was larger than agreed. But the issue at the heart of the dispute is about the control of the Temple Mount. It is indeed the most holy site for Jews. It's only the third holiest site for Islam. So there are all these little things can happen. You can wake up one morning and find out there's a new crisis. The kingdom's Jordanian king's special custodial relationship in the Temple Mount is one of the central pillars on which rests a monarchy whose family claims to descend from the Prophet Muhammad and which takes pride in a long history as the keeper of the holy Islamic places. In other words, Israel has allowed Hussein's family to be the guardians of the Temple Mount because it's called Al-Haram al-Sharif. It's one of the central pillars on which rests the monarchy. So the Jordanian monarchy is very sensitive to its relationship to Israel on the Temple Mount. So it's a crisis that can always recur. It's happened a number of times over the years. So I just wanted to bring this up now because it seems that there is some unrest in Jordan. We don't exactly know what it is. But if an unfriendly regime takes over in Jordan, the possible hotspots and the critical points between Israel and Jordan are going to be multiplied. So, as I said, we have a 300-kilometer border with Jordan. We share a lot of interests with Jordan. In a sense, we are the protector of Jordan in many ways. But the very existence of Jordan is a sense of buffer between us and unfriendly Muslim states far to the east. So Jordan is an issue that we have to keep our eye upon. I'll be back after the break.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
You're listening to The Jay Shapiro Show.
You're back with Jay Shapiro. I want to say something about the response of the head of a hospital here in Israel, which I think reflects really well on not only the medical profession, but a Jewish responsibility. It's not easy to take difficult situations and to take responsibility, even when painful, but that's what is expected of mature individuals who are in positions of responsibility. There are some positions in which a person operates under stress, in which the life and well-being of others is in your hands, in which decisions have serious repercussions. And humans, no matter how intentioned they are, how well-trained, how careful, will unfortunately sometimes be involved in situations where they may have erred in judgment or action. Now, one such calling is a doctor, particularly a physician in an intensive care unit in a hospital. Now, what's happened is, and the reason I bring this up, is because the pandemic that's buffeting our society for a year now has put particular stress on medical professionals. And 2 weeks ago, the unthinkable happened. A coronavirus patient in Ichilov Hospital in Tel Aviv died after his breathing tube became detached, and it seems that through human error, that was not recognized on time to intervene and save his life. It's a terrible tragedy. A relatively young individual dies due to an accident precipitated by the stress of the situation. What happens after such calamity is equally important, as it reveals what kind of people we are and what kind of people are in this sensitive position. In this case, Ichilov Hospital Chief Professor Ronnie Gamzu appeared in front of the news cameras and stated unequivocally, "The patient's death is my responsibility." He took full responsibility for the tragic incident and stated clearly that a proper investigation is being conducted. What's interesting is, and good about it, there was no shrinking or shirking responsibility, no blaming others or passing the buck. The professor clearly stated that as director of the hospital, the bottom line rests with him. But that wasn't all. He, as well as other hospital officials, met with the family and shared in their grief. They updated them about the investigation and remained in touch. He then turned to his staff with two messages, one of encouragement and one of learning lessons so that such an incident is not repeated. Individuals in positions of authority should take responsibility. It's interesting, by the way, along these same lines, the Biden administration has tapped an Orthodox Jewish woman, Stephanie Pollack, to be the deputy administrator of the Federal Highway Administration. Possibly among her credentials is the fact in her previous position as Massachusetts Transportation Secretary, she was able to say in response to a question about taking responsibility for a motorist's death, she said, "I don't know the answer legally, but yes, morally. Do I feel responsible? I'm responsible for the motorcyclists who were killed in New Hampshire. Yes." Unfortunately, it seems that not every person or agency is big enough to confront a difficult incident in a responsible manner. And it's really important. That's why I wanted to bring this up, because of the stress we are under over a year now with the coronavirus. Our sages tell us that the Jewish royal family, the family of David, traces itself back to Judah and commences with King David because both Judah and King David had the trait of taking responsibility after they had a lapse of judgment. So Professor Ronnie Gamzu of the hospital here in Tel Aviv and his staff were acting in the mold of true Jewish heroes. And I think it's absolutely a fantastic thing. It's something that's under the radar. It's under the headlines. It appeared about a week and a half ago in a paper on page 11. But I think it's the kind of thing that should be on the front page because it's such a Jewish thing, or what a Jewish thing should be. to take responsibility, even if you're not directly responsible, but it comes under an area of your responsibility. And Professor gives you the exact right Jewish thing. And the people of Israel can be really proud of him for so doing. I want to switch gears now and say something about the Jews in the Muslim world. We're right after the holiday of Pesach. I want to say a word about the Jewish communities in Islamic states. And these communities are on the rise, and they are the gateway to enhancing Muslim-Jewish relations. Jews have lived in Islamic countries for thousands of years. Perhaps the best-known example is Maimonides, one of the great Jewish sages, who was raised in Cordoba in Spain before settling in caliphate-controlled Egypt. Countless Jewish communities, many Jews found refuges in Islamic lands to get away from Christian persecution. And once again today, peace, tolerance, and prosperity are on the rise apparently for Jews in many Islamic countries. Notwithstanding the impact of the pandemic, thousands of Jews across the Muslim world took part in Purim festivities, and thousands of food packages for seders in a box were prepared by communities in advance of Passover. So it's really interesting what's happening in these countries. In Morocco and Turkey, for example, ranking government officials, each in their own country, openly attend Hanukkah menorah lighting a few months ago. Morocco has integrated the history of the Jewish community of the country in the public school curriculum. Turkey has passed a law allowing public and private sector workers to take days off for Jewish holidays without repercussion. And in Turkey, they've reconstructed 5 historic synagogues in the past 5 years. In the United Arab Emirates, for the first time, the government formally licensed Jewish communities and houses of worship. Last year, the American Jewish community partnered with the Muslim World League to visit Nazi death camps and pledged a renewed commitment to tolerance and an eradication of all forms of bigotry, including anti-Semitism and, of course, Islamophobia, the other way around. About a month ago, Emirati, Bahraini, Moroccan, and Israeli young leaders joined together for the first ever joint Middle East International Holocaust Remembrance Day ceremony. Meanwhile, the largest Jewish communities in the Muslim world, believe it or not, those communities are in Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan. They continue to witness a surge in Jewish life facilitated through a network of locally based rabbis and lay leaders. It's a different world. Something has been established called the Chair of the Alliance of Rabbis in Islamic State. It's a rabbinic organization that boasts members from Azerbaijan, Morocco, Turkey, Tunisia, Iran, believe it or not, Kazakhstan, Kosovo, Kyrgyzstan, the UAE, Uganda, Uzbekistan, and Nigeria, among others. So these things are really exciting and they're really encouraging. And again, these things don't get the headlines, and I think they're absolutely of great historical significance after all these years. So it's interesting. Each country has its own unique dynamics, its own history. And reconciling these dynamics with the needs and circumstances of these communities demands staying clear of politics and staying clear of grandstanding. The warming relations between Israel and Muslim countries, which bring with them more opportunities for local Jewish life to blossom, that is something that we enthusiastically must welcome. Indeed, some have even played a fundamental part in preparing the ground for this reconciliation. Those Jews in those communities are busy building up their own communities, and developing interpersonal relationships among citizens of those countries. So these things demonstrate that peaceful coexistence is possible, but they cannot place their focus on international political dynamics. It's got to be something at the level of person to person. So while there is obviously room for greater acceptance and more governmental support, it appears at the moment that the future is bright for Jews in Islamic countries, something we could not have predicted or even thought of even 10 years ago. So that's what's happening in the Jewish world. So I'll sign off now. Take care of yourselves until next week. And I hope you found these last couple of items elucidating, to say the least. These are things happening under the headlines, but they're important for the future of the Jewish communities in these countries. So, take care of yourself. Jay Shapiro, signing off.
Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.home page, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.